So now we are going to hear different devotees' experiences of how others left their bodies, or that they have seen. So Mother Krishna Priya raised her hand first. No, you speak first. Yeah, give her the mic.
Well, I would like to tell the story of Rani. I wasn't going to tell, but Apoorva Prabhu, when he was cooking in the kitchen, I told him a little bit about Rani, and he said, "Are you going to tell the story?" And I said, "No, because I spoke yesterday." And he said, "No, you must tell the story." So I wasn't there personally, but I was very much affected by the story of Rani. So many years ago, there was a lady who lived in New York, and she was a psychologist. And she had spent a lot of times in India, like living in different ashrams, and she was very interested in spiritual life, and she was following principles. And then she had lived in New York, and at that time she started visiting the temple in Brooklyn, or it might even have, it was in Brooklyn, and I think that she also met Lakshmi Nrisinga Prabhu at that time. And there was a lady who later came to spend time with us at our temple here, Diane Priolo, who was also known as Yasoda, who was her friend. And so she brought her to the temple, and they took darshan of Radha Govinda, and she had association. So then when Diane moved here, she started coming to the temple, and her friend Rani, who was a psychologist, lived in New York. And somehow or other she had strayed away from her devotional principles. She hadn't been with ISKCON, but she had been following devotional principles, and she ended up like marrying someone who was not, you know, following the principles of spiritual life. But her friend had moved here, and her friend at that time had two young girls, and the girls were visiting the temple, and then one of the, and the mother was living in Raleigh, and she was working. And then one of the devotees here said to me one day, "Wouldn't it be nice of Alexander and Rebecca if they would be able to go to Mother Irma's Gurukula?" And I thought, how will Alexander and Rebecca ever go to Mother Irma's Gurukula? You know, this is like a very unbelievable thing. How would this happen? But somehow or other, she became interested, and she wanted to send her children to the devotees' school. And so her friend Rani, who had was the one that knew the devotees, sent the money for the tuition to send her to school. And so she was sending the two girls to school. And then Diane at that time became initiated, and she was practicing Krishna consciousness. And she was always very attached to Rani, and she would speak with Rani about devotional service. And then she got a phone call from Rani, who was her best friend, that Rani had cancer, and it was progressing really, really rapidly, so she was really worried about her. So then she asked Bhair Krishna Goswami to make a tape, a bhajan tape for Rani. So he made this tape called Rani Special. It was very beautiful, beautiful tape of all the Vaishnava songs. And so she started listening to that tape all the time. She was just constantly listening to it. And her husband, he was still like trying to engage her in sinful activity, but she was becoming very, very detached. And then she became, you know, and she was still helping to send the girls to school. And then she became very, very thin and very emaciated. And then Yasoda, who also had worked as a social worker, decided to go and be with her. So she went to see her there. And when then she got there, there was like a whole mixture of all kind of people there, because she had all her friends and all her relatives there, and her sister was there, and they had belonged to, there were people from every kind of ashram you can imagine, every kind of yoga group and ashram group, and from all over. And so everyone was trying to help Rani leave their body in the way that they saw fit, what they saw was right. And Yasoda was very determined that she had to keep this tape going. You know, she had to keep this tape going, and that Rani would keep hearing the tape and hearing the tape. And then during that time that she was with Rani, she would call the temple. And so all the time we would be like, you know, praying to Radha Golokananda to help her leave her body nicely. We were all the time praying to the deities that she would be able to leave properly. And then I believe that that Bir Krishan Goswami called her on the phone, and he had never met her personally, but he spoke to her on the phone, and he gave her spiritual guidance and proper instructions of how to leave the body. And still, like, all the friends and relatives and different people, they were all, like, sometimes getting a little upset with Yasoda, but she was very determined. And then somehow or other, when it was time for her to leave, I think everyone else was gone from the room, and then Yasoda was just holding her in her arms, and she was chanting, and Yasoda was chanting into her ear. And she was able to leave her body in that way, you know, hearing the holy names. And I was seeing, because she had, you know, because she had done this service, she had been concerned about these two girls, and she wanted these girls to be able to hear about Krishna, that although, you know, her life had, you know, gone through so many difficulties and she had so many challenges, that when it came to the time for her to leave her body, that Krishna sent someone there to give her the holy names. And then I thought about it later, because then this one particular devotee who had helped her, for a number of reasons, she had, you know, isn't following strictly right now Krishna consciousness, but I was also thinking how Krishna arranged that at that particular time and circumstance that she was so much desiring to help her friend leave, you know, that Krishna arranged that her friend left then and not now. And so it really gave me the faith so much to see how if we somehow or other try to render some service and try to help others in Krishna consciousness, even if we're not qualified or we have so many lacks, that Krishna will come through. And then I also came to see that it always has to be the right time, because then shortly after that, I was outside in the driveway, and there were some very nice disciples of Satsut Maharaj that were visiting here from Baltimore. So we were speaking, and then they said how their spiritual master had been spending time with them. And at that time, I hadn't seen my spiritual master for a long time. And I said, oh, you're so fortunate, because I haven't seen my spiritual master for such a long time. And then they said, the lady chastised me. She said, you are all the time with the deities and Krishna, you know. How can you complain like this, you know? And then right when she said that, all of a sudden, this yellow jacket came. And it stung me. You know, I got stung by this yellow jacket, you know. And then I thought, oh my God, I got stung by this yellow jacket. And in those days, I was on the altar, like, from morning until night. Like, my life was a little bit different then. So I thought, but it's time for the offering, so I have to immediately run onto the altar and make the offering. I can't pay any attention to getting stung. So I came into the pujari room, and I started making the offering to the deities. And then all of a sudden I looked out and I saw Tulsi Devi, and then somehow or other I felt that I wasn't in my body anymore. I was kind of like rising up out of my body. So then Yasoda comes running up and she goes, you're having a severe allergic reaction. You're going to die. You have to go to the hospital immediately. And I was like, no, you don't understand. If I'm leaving my body, you know, I have to stay here in the temple with Tulsi Devi and the deities, you know. And then somehow or other, Bir Krishan Maharaj, he was in Eflin taking prasadam at, I think it was Dirga's house or something. He was taking prasadam there. And then everyone said, you know, she's not going to leave the temple room and her throat's closing up and she's going to die and she wants to stay with the deities. So then they called Bir Krishan Maharaj, and then he gave the message. He said, it's not time. You know, you need to go to the doctors. So then they took me to the emergency room, and my throat was like closing up, and they said if I hadn't gotten there, I would have left my body. But somehow this Indian doctor came in, and I was just like preaching to him about, you know, leaving the body. And but then I saw that it wasn't my time, and I realized that, you know, that I actually wasn't ready, because I thought at that time I started crying, and I realized that I wasn't ready, and perhaps I would have been afraid, you know, perhaps I wouldn't have been able to cross over because there was some fear there. So I don't want to take much time with my story, but I would like to very much thank His Holiness Bhakti Chu Swami, because all of us will have to face a day of leaving our body. And so it's very important that the Vaishnavas come and they teach us how to be fearless and how to go back home, back to Godhead. So I would very much like to thank him. And I hope that when the time comes and I'm leaving my body, that I could meditate also on how he's been instructing us, and that will help me to be fearless. So we'd like to again thank him. And over the last few years, Krishna has arranged that since I've been doing this service as a temple president, that whenever people are leaving their body, that I have been called a lot, and it has so much increased my faith, because I really have seen time and time again how if Krishna sends the devotees to help people leave their body, and so this also has helped to rid me of that fear when I see just how merciful and kind Krishna is. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
My husband and I were living in Vancouver from, I believe it was 1987 to 1989. And there was one devotee there, his name was Urakram. He was probably in his mid-30s. And we noticed he was in a wheelchair, and we understood that he had multiple sclerosis. And there was always one devotee that was asked to, you know, please spend time with him, take care of him, because his health was degenerating. Multiple sclerosis, as I understand, the immune system completely stops, and then you end up, you're always in and out of the hospital because you contract various illnesses. And despite the fact that he was in a wheelchair, he could get around at that time. I remember when we first lived there, he was able to get around on his own. But despite the fact that he was, you know, confined to this wheelchair, he would go out on Sankirtan. He was, they used to call him the Sankirtan General. And he used to win awards every Christmas marathon for distributing so many of Prabhupada's Back to Godheads. And in order for him to go, he'd have to go on a train. He'd have to go up this very long, steep hill. And sometimes on his way back, he would actually tip over on his wheelchair. And in the middle, you know, he would go alone. There were no devotees with him. And he would just be lying there because he couldn't move. And people that lived around there knew that it was close to the temple. They would call the devotees and say, please come and get your friend. He's, you know, we can't. He was big also and very heavy. And the devotees would go and get him, and every time he would go out and distribute back to God, so he was very, very determined. And that short time that we were there, his health very seriously deteriorated, so that at the very end, must have been 88, 89 at that time, he was going blind. They had to strap him in the wheelchair, because he could not, his body was not functioning normally. He would just fall over. And I remember one time I was in the altar addressing the deities, and I heard this thud, and he had fallen out of his wheelchair during Bhagavatam class. And but he was completely fixed in his devotional service, hearing and chanting, and always going for the noon artik, and encouraging the pujari to give him all the pakoras that he wasn't supposed to eat. And he was a real general. He was undaunting in his determination to remain, to become and remain Krishna conscious. So at the very end, his external faculties, his sight, his speech began to leave him. His speech was very slurred. He could hardly see. Still, every day he would come for the noon artik, and again he would convince the pujari to give him all the pakoras. And so I remember I was teaching the Gurukul at that time, and we did a play of Ajamil. This was towards the end of the year, around Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's disappearance day. And I remember we dedicated this puppet show that we did to Urukram. He came in. They had, I believe at the time, he was completely unable to move the wheelchair himself. And the temple president actually announced to, I don't know how many hundreds of people there were, that Urukram Das Brahmachari was getting ready to leave his body. And we were dedicating this puppet show to him, and this really hit me personally. I thought, you know, how would I feel if I were in that situation? You know, here's an announcement, you're getting ready to leave your body. But Urukram himself had accepted that, and it was very obvious. And again, in his undaunting and determined way, he came in, he took darshan of the deities, although he could hardly see at that time. So I believe at that time his health had so much deteriorated. The doctors had told us that he wasn't going to live very much longer. And I can't remember the details. At some point he was in the hospital, and they tried, you know, they put him on the drip, and they could see it wasn't going to get anywhere. So the doctors actually told the devotees and his family members, please take him back to the temple because that's where he belongs, and we know that that's, you can do the most for him. So the devotee was trying to do this, spend many hours with him, reading to him, talking to him, and it was certainly my first encounter with any devotees that had left their body. And I think, you know, I was thinking, what do I do? You know, I mean, can you just blatantly say, we understand you're going to leave your body? I was thinking, you know, what would I be going through? So I thought, well, that's the path we're going to take. I mean, this is his final test. So we chose passages from the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of our readings. Everything we read was geared towards, now it's time to leave your body. And Urukram would just listen. And at that time, actually, I don't think he could see at all. He doesn't have many more hours to live. So at that point, myself and a couple of God sisters, we decided we're going to, you know, make a schedule. And we would spend so many hours with him. The devotee was trying to do this, spend many hours with him, reading to him, talking to him. And it was certainly my first encounter with any devotees that had left their body. And I think, you know, I was thinking, what do I do? You know, I mean, can you just blatantly say, we understand you're going to leave your body? I was thinking, you know, what would I be going through? So I thought, well, that's the path we're going to take. I mean, this is his final test. So we chose passages from the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of our readings. Everything we read was geared towards, now it's time to leave your body. And Urukram would just listen. And at that time, actually, I don't think he could see at all. He couldn't speak. And even though they gave him a few hours to live, he lived for another week. He wasn't eating. He was hardly drinking. But you could see that Krishna was giving him the time to be prepared for the time of death. So the devotee that he was staying with had experience, I guess, with his own mother leaving her body, and he could see the different symptoms, bodily symptoms, when the body is actually getting ready to leave, you know, the soul is getting ready to leave the body. So we were having a kirtan one night, and his brother was also there. His brother was very moved, very deeply moved from the devotee's behavior and their dedication, their help. So he was there at that time, and this particular devotee said, it looks like Urukram is now getting ready to leave. So at that time, the devotees that were there, a lot of them had left. So I was there and a few God sisters, maybe a few God brothers, and the kirtan became the most incredible kirtan I had personally ever experienced. And Urukram at that time, he had pictures on the sides of his bed and above him, so that whenever he would turn, and he was always turning to the side, to the, looking above him, even though he couldn't see, he was still fixing his mind on the Supreme Lord. So it came that at that point, somehow you just, I don't know, we just knew he was leaving his body, and the kirtan was so incredibly tumultuous and sweet. It was the most incredible experience I had ever had in my Krishna consciousness. And at that time, his brother thought that Urukram had left, and he was, at that point, he was very distraught, and he was yelling at everybody, stop chanting, stop chanting. We kind of ignored him because we knew Urukram had not left. We continued the kirtan, and at that point, Urukram left. And it was interesting for me, never having seen, you know, someone leave the human body, but the change was just amazing. He looked very peaceful, but the color had changed. You could see the soul is no longer present in the body. It was so obvious. Anyway, so it was a very exhilarating experience, and I know one of my god sisters and I, a couple of us, we went outside, and we were just, it was 1 or 1:30 in the morning, and we were just, we were jumping up and down and chanting in ecstasy. It was the most ecstatic experience we had ever had. And for me, it was very rewarding, and it certainly taught me a lot, and that I always, you know, I always pray that somehow or the other, personally, when I leave my body, that I can also be in the association of devotees that are chanting, because you can see the potency is there. Krishna's present, Srila Prabhupada's present, the whole disciplic succession, and that potency is there, and that's what's going to carry us to, you know, hopefully back to Godhead. Thank you. All right, here's the
So when I had an experience, one devotee, he was, actually we were just first, we were following a seminar about Sankirtan book distribution, and he had a lot of struggles in his devotional life. He was always complaining that he couldn't serve Krishna properly in his situation. He had struggles with his health, and but he was a very... very devotional. He was always very devotional, and everybody loved his qualities. He was a very special devotee and dear to everybody. And so they had this seminar, book distribution seminar, and he seemed to suddenly completely change his mood during the seminar. He was completely in ecstasy and so participating and happy, and was just completely changed from his lamenting and being always sick. He completely changed. And then at the end of the seminar, in the just day after the seminar, in the morning at 7:30, when the kirtan was going on and the Govinda prayers finished and the kirtan started, then he was dancing in ecstasy in the front of the deities, and then he just, in front of my nose, he just dropped down and he left his body, and everybody was, you know, it was a little bit... was this, you know, but they all went on chanting and chanting, and he just changed completely, like she said, from color. He became blue, and you could see his soul had left his body, and he was just going back to Krishna. It was very clear. So yeah. Everybody took care of him, and he went upstairs, and we all chanted for hours before him, and then he went around the temple, and it was very unexpected. Nobody expected that, but you can see how Krishna's mercy just suddenly took him back to Godhead.
This is actually something a little different because it's the story of my father. And I was a brahmachari back in 75. And I joined the movement in Detroit, and I came from a very large family. I actually had 13 brothers and sisters. So, I had 7 other brothers, and my brothers, unlike me, were very passionate type men. And when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, that was the last thing they could have conceived of me doing, or any one of the family, to, for that matter. So, actually, when I joined, I got, just before I moved into the temple, I went to my last Thanksgiving dinner with them all. And it was a big, they always had a big thing to do. And of course, you know, the diet of Americans at Thanksgiving is not mentionable in the temple. But I had become a vegetarian, so then one of my brothers said, so what is this into? And I was like, oh, I don't want to get into a whole discussion with these guys, because they're all like football players, right? So I said, well, you know, it's a process of self-realization. And another brother came up, what are you talking about? I go, well, she was saying, well, Randy's into this Hare Krishna thing. You're into that. What? I said, well, and anyways, make a long story short, I got in a huge fight with the whole family. And at the end, I said, you're all nothing but dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And one of my brothers said, yeah, we'll see what you're doing in 5 years. This is just a fad. You'll outgrow 5 years. I said, all right, we'll see. And at that point, I made a commitment. I'm sticking to this at least 5 years. After that, I'm blooping. But at least for 5 years, I'm going to stay in this Hare Krishna. So anyways, a few weeks later, I moved into the temple and became a brahmachari, shaved my head, and so on. And my father was, well, those who knew my mother, Pragosha, of course, was my best friend, and my mother was like a saint. She was like Mother Teresa. She was the most giving woman. She had 14 kids, but she used to take care of 25 kids because everyone would come over to my house. But as soon as my father would come home, all the kids would run. Because she was like Mother Teresa, he was like Genghis Khan. What are you doing with these bicycles? We had 14 kids, so, you know, memories I had with my father, he was always yelling. Because there was always someone to yell at, right? You could never get all 14 kids being good. I know that with my own kids now. So, you know. But somehow or other, my mother never yelled, and she kind of kept a semblance of sanity in the family, and my father was like the ruler. And so he used to always say to me, you big-time operator. He used to always kind of chastise me. He was very heavy, very strict, and in many ways he was physical to us as well. You know, he used to beat us. But he was, you know, other than that, he was a good man because he worked hard for his kids and so on, and a devout Catholic. Anyways, when I was, I was in the movement for about 3 years. I was a brahmachari, and they told me my father had a stroke. And so they had taken him to the hospital in Detroit, and they said that he had gone into a coma, and I don't know how the doctors knew this, but they said all of his senses had closed down: his eyes, his you know, ability to speak, you know, smell, everything, but his hearing. That's all he could do, is hear. So they put him on this medication, and, you know, with the drip, which was keeping him alive and so on. And, you know, my whole family had gathered, and they called up the temple and said, "Can you come down?" So I went there in my brahmachari robes and chanting japa. So I said, I'm just going to go right up to him and just start chanting loudly Hare Krishna. So, because I was a little bit fanatical back then, not mellow like I am now. So I walked into the room, and I had one brother who was 2 years older than me that actually was going to join the movement, but he was a very kind-hearted soul, but he was kind of, you know, more of a hippie sort of type, but never could control his senses totally, but very favorable to the movement, and loved Prabhupada, read Prabhupada's books, used to give me and Pragosh donations all the time. So I went in there, and they were all there, all 13 of my brothers and sisters, all sitting in there, and I came in with my shaved head. So they were all like sitting there, and it was almost like a morgue, like he had already died, right? So I just went up to the bed, and I just started going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, and they're all like looking at each other like this, right? So, because I'm just thinking, hey, he needs a holy name. That's all he needs now. Whatever he's done in his life is behind him. Right now he needs a holy name. Because in these holy names, Krishna has invested all his transcendental potency. So I'm chanting, and I just pretty much thought, well, like most devotees, I don't care what they think. I'm going to just chant Hare Krishna. So I'm chanting there. And they're like all looking at my mother, and they're all looking at me like my brothers are looking at me like, boy, I'd like to get him outside. But they all respected my mother, so no one would speak if my mother would speak. So my mother came up and said, you know, Randy, Dad doesn't really know Hare Krishna. And I said, Mom, I said, the names of Krishna are just like fire. Whether you know it or not, they burn all the sins of your heart. So whether he was trained as Hare Krishna or not, he needs to hear the holy names. So she went, okay, Randy. So then she was satisfied. All my brothers were like, oh my God. So they didn't want to make a big deal of it. So then they started going, well, you know, because none of them were really practicing, you know, their religion very strongly. So then one of them said, maybe we should pray to, you know, start saying the rosary or something, you know. And they said, yeah, let's say the rosary. And then they said, but let's not say it in here where Dad can hear it. Yeah, let's go outside. So the whole family got up and they walked out to say the rosary, except for me and my brother. The brother that was going to be a devotee. So, actually, I'll back up just a little. First, you know, I was chanting for a while, and they were getting a little upset. So I went outside, and my brother wanted to talk to me. So we went out to the hall. He says, you think you should do this? And I preached to him. I said, this is the only thing that is valuable to our father now. He's not going to live. And this can purify him from all the sins, not only of this lifetime, but for billions of lifetimes. So he said, well, what should I do? I said, well, you get on the left-hand side of him, and I'll get on the right, and we'll just chant in his ears. He said, all right. So he got in, and that's when he got on the left, I got on the right, and we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, right? And that's when they said, well, should we do the rosary? Well, let's go outside so he doesn't hear us praying. And I was thinking, boy, these people don't have a clue what they're doing. So, but I could see, oh, this was Lord Chaitanya's arrangement. So they all got up and they walked out and they started saying their prayers, you know, whatever they were doing outside. And because me and my father, you know, he was like an absolute autocrat in my family. And he was a very big man also. And intimidating. But, and a bit proud. A proud man also. So he never took it from anyone. What to say his sons. you know, he was the ruler. What he said goes. There was no discussion. So all of a sudden, he was a captive audience to the son who was the biggest punk of them all. Jive. So all of a sudden, I'm on one side, he's on the other side, and we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he couldn't do anything, he couldn't speak. He couldn't even open his eyes, but he could hear. And all of a sudden, his body started to, he started to shake. Like this, like the palsy. And my brother looked at me, I said, keep chanting. And I went, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And it was as if he wanted to sit up and fight. But he couldn't. So then I just kept on chanting. And then I said, I kind of touched his hand. And I said, Dad, I said, this chanting was delivered to us by Krishna himself 500 years ago as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I said, he is the Yuga avatar. He's known as Patita Pavana. And he is the deliverer of the most falling. So no matter whatever we have done in this life, if we take shelter of this holy name that he has given us, he will free us from all our sinful reactions. I said, so whether you know this name of Krishna, Krishna is God's name. They call him Jehovah, and I preach to him all these different names. So this name of Krishna is very, very special. So just try to hear it and get the mercy of this, and you will be delivered from this world. So we started chanting again, and he started shaking, and then all of a sudden, he became very calm. And I just chanted, and every now and then I would stop and I would preach to him, and then we'd chant again, and this went on for about 1 hour. And then he became very peaceful, and then the nurses came in, they checked his vital signs. He said, well, he's calmed down a bit. I said, oh, yes. So then my family all came back in, and then I left at that time. And a few days later, at that time, you know, he was being fed intravenously, so he wasn't, you know, he wasn't breaking the principles of meat eating, he wasn't having illicit sex, he wasn't gambling, he wasn't taking intoxication, so he was following the four regular principles, not by his choice, but by circumstances, and then he was hearing the holy name of the Lord, by both sides, on one side, myself, and on my the other side, by my brother, Bhakta Ralph. And a couple days later, my older brother, Bob, was alone in the room, and all of a sudden, he gave up his body. And my older brother is a very emotional brother. And he started to scream, oh no, oh God, how could you do this? Oh God, why have you done this? Why have you done this, God? And this was in a Catholic hospital, and he ran down into the chapel, and all my brothers and sisters were actually more worried about him than about my father. And he went into the chapel, and all of a sudden he said he saw a vision of my father. And he said, it was as if he was up in heaven. And he was waving to him saying, it's all right. So a couple of years later, my brother, I always was trying to convince him into joining the temple. And actually, it was not a couple years later. It was the next year. It was 1976. And Srila Prabhupada, I was on the Radha Damodar party at the time. And And I had convinced him to come with me to drive out to San Francisco and see Srila Prabhupada. A few months earlier, I asked him, I wanted to go to India, and I didn't have any money as a brahmachari, and I needed $1,000, and all he had was $1,000 in his life, in his bank account. He was rather poor, and he just gave everything, gave it all to me, and then I wasn't able to go, so I just gave it to the deities. And so then I said, Ralph, just forget about this material world. It's so much struggling, so much. Why don't you come with us? Just go see Srila Prabhupada. We'll go see Prabhupada together and see Lord Jagannath. So I was in West, so he was going to meet me in Wisconsin. So so there was this meeting point. So I went to this point, Wisconsin, and he wasn't there. So I called him up, and he was on his phone, and he said, Udayananda, I'm really sorry. I'm too weak, and I just can't control my senses. He said, maybe in my next life I'll be a devotee. And 2 weeks later, someone murdered him. So, but he gave to gave everything he had to Krishna, his money, and he chanted Hare Krishna in his father's ear. And so I often think, I look around the Hare Krishna movement to see my brother. I'm sure he's one of these Gurukula kids. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Harinam Sankirtan ki, Srila Prabhupada teaching us how to die ki, Gaur Premanandi.
I would like to tell the story of a god sister of mine. Her name is Mahima Bhushana Prabhu. She was a very staunch devotee of Prabhupada. She was very dedicated to serving Prabhupada. She had two children, and was on the day that she left her body, she was 8 months pregnant, and that morning she had been dressing with great difficulty the deities. This is in New Mayapur in France. She had been dressing the deities and had to go shopping later on, and her car, she was a passenger, her car got hit by a truck, and she was thrown into the street and was lying there bleeding to death, and people gathered around, and she asked for her bead bag. And she peacefully lay there and waited and chanted, waited for the ambulance to come. And when they came, they said they were the people who were taking her. They said that she was actually very calm. They were struck by her peacefulness. And this whole incident was in the newspaper, and I read later on that they said that she was just chanting on her beads and seemed very peaceful, and she was saying something that they couldn't quite understand. But they were printing it anyway. What she had said in her last moment was she had a big smile on her face and said, the Vishnu Dutas are coming. And that's how she was.
I don't know why I'm so broke up. I didn't really know her that well. She was a brilliant preacher. She had like a photographic memory. She used to talk out of her nose a little, though. I was getting, you know what Krishna says? And she could talk a mile a minute. We were amazed. Anyone could out-talk both of us. So I moved into the temple, and she was very ecstatic to see that I did that. And then a couple months later, Pragosh moved in. Pragosh just told me last week, he said, you know, he was just talking of how wonderful Prabhupada had created these temples. How actually,
You just walked in and immediately you had this huge family. And people cared about you in the right way. If you were nonsense, everyone was on your case. And if you did good, everyone was like, Chai. It's just such an amazing thing. And he said, just like when I finally moved in to the temple, I was coming in the back door of 8311 East Jefferson. You know, you go downstairs and you take your shoes off and there's a furnace, I think, down there, right? He says, I walked in the door with my backpack and my sleeping bag, and the first person to meet me was Velocity. And she said, Bhakta Pat, are you moving in? And he said, yeah. And he said, please accept my humble obeisances. And that was the first devotee to greet him. And he says, I got up and he was like, wow, they really want me here. So the thing was, Velocity, she was a brilliant woman, but she also had a very sharp tongue. You knew Velocity. I mean, she could rail on a person like you never believe. And a lot of the women especially were intimidated by her. So she had a habit of getting a little too strong. But later on, she left Detroit, went to France, and did service there and so on. And just so dedicated to Prabhupada, so dedicated to Prabhupada. And then I don't know how many years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I think she had cancer, is it, Batu? She had cancer. So she found out she was going to die. So for the whole year before she died, she thought of every single devotee she ever chastised. And either wrote to them, called them on the phone, or saw them personally, and begged for their forgiveness for any offense that she might have committed. And then I just realized sitting here that actually I probably committed a few offenses to her. And I never got a chance to say I was sorry. But in the last day, she became just like an angel. They told me. And she was just so, like, happy. And people were coming in, and she was so sweet to the children. And this one little girl became very attached to her. And she could see she was getting really sick, and then her parents told her she's going to leave her body. So this little girl went into her room, and she started crying. And Velocity reached over, and she held her hand. She said, don't cry. She said, don't cry, because I'm going back to Krishna. And she left her body at that very moment. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
There was one devotee who joined in New Vrindavan, and she was very quiet. When she came to the temple, she had a daughter, and even perhaps a son at the time. She did very menial service at first, and then she was always going out and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. Her children were taken care of at the Gurukula, and she was always on traveling Sankirtan. She lived on traveling Sankirtan for many years and became extremely attached to Srila Prabhupada's books. As the years went on and her children grew up, she moved from West Virginia to Mississippi, and I met her in New Orleans at the temple there. And she was going out and she was collecting Lakshmi to try and buy some property to give her children something so that when she left, that they would have something, you know, because they didn't have anything. They just led a temple life all the time. So she really didn't want to be going out, and it was extremely hard for her. She would make these cue cards She'd think of a topic, and then she'd look through all the Prabhupada's books and find every verse that matched the topic. And she'd study the cue cards while she was out collecting. And she had gotten a little ill, but didn't go to the doctor. And a little time went on before she finally went to the doctor to find out what was going on. And that was when she was having a vacation at her parents' house. And her mother said, please go to the doctor. Find out what's going on with your body. And when she did that, it was far too late. She had cancer through all of her bones. And while she was waiting for the results and everything, her body just deteriorated, like within a matter of a week and a half or so. And then the next thing she knew, she was in a state where there were no devotees, and she was bedridden, and she was just with her parents. And so she had a laptop, and she couldn't move her body, but she would look at Prabhupada's books on her laptop. And this went on for some time where that was her association, was the laptop and the database. And there was really no return from this point of her deterioration. Well, the devotees in West Virginia found out about her situation and immediately went and got her and said, she has to come and be with us. She can't stay remote, you know, away from the devotees. So they did. They took a van and they went to her parents' house and they packed up all of her stuff and they put her in a van and they took her laptop and they brought her to New Vrindavan. And as she was going to the doctors, they were saying, oh, she only has a few weeks left. That went on for about 2 years, I think. But at a certain point, I spoke with her daughter, Karnamrita. This is Mother Kunti. And Karnamrita said she's going to leave in the next few days. So I drove to West Virginia to be with her. She was in the hospital. And I, at that time, understood why Prabhupada was so adamant about not being in the hospital. Because the nurses, the aides were bringing in stuff, trying to feed her, and it wasn't vegetarian. And if no one was there to protect her, they would have given her all this abominable stuff. Well, she was still talking really slowly then. And one day we were there with her, and she went unconscious. And the nurses rushed in, and the next thing I knew, she was unconscious, and they had stuffed tubes up her nose and down her throat and had her in monitors. And the whole room just changed. The atmosphere completely changed from peaceful, just chanting, talking about Krishna, to artificial, like trying to keep her alive. And she was unconscious for a couple of hours. And when she came to, the first thing that she said with a great struggle, it took her maybe 20 minutes to tell us that the remedial measure is to hear from the pure devotee. And she was trying to quote, I believe it was a Nectar of Devotion verse. And then she came back to consciousness, and she was preaching to us, just heavy, just straightforward. She wasn't talking about anything else. She was preaching Prabhupada's books. And they had put a big, huge picture that one of the devotees from New Vrindavan had painted of Radha and Krishna and the gopis, just directly in her line of vision. And so she stayed for some time like that with many, many devotees coming to visit her. To make a long story short, after some time, the doctors released her to go back to the temple and said there was nothing more that they could do for her at this point. And so she went back to the temple in the care of the devotees. And it was around this time of the year, about 5 years ago, and Radhanath Maharaj was there, and many other senior devotees were there, and her daughter was there, and some of the young ladies from Ohio were helping to take care of her. And Radhanath Maharaj goes to New York Ratha Yatra every year without fail. Well, this particular year, the day before Ratha Yatra, or 2 days before Ratha Yatra, he became ill and wasn't going to be able to travel. And so he decided to stay. And on the day of Ratha Yatra, Mother Kunti left her body. with Radhanath Maharaj and the rest of the devotees there at Vrindavan, completely packed in her room, chanting, and her daughter was right by her side, and her daughter leaned over to her ear and thanked her for giving her Krishna, and she left.
Hare Krishna. So it's a very enriching experience to hear all of you speak about your personal experiences of all these wonderful devotees leaving their bodies, which is a clear indication that this Krishna consciousness movement is indeed a way to immortality. Although I termed this seminar as the art of dying, but the actual objective is to point out that this is the way to immortality. And it becomes clear that when one follows this process with all earnestness, one does attain immortality. It's a clear indication that beyond this material nature, there is another reality. That is the spiritual reality, the absolute reality, the realm of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And we all are here to gradually move forward towards that ultimate goal. And jat gatvana nivartante stad dhamma paramang mama. Krishna is saying when one goes there, when one goes to that spiritual reality, one doesn't have to come back. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah.